Welcome to Triad Arts Up Close. I'm David Ford. The Piedmont is alive with the sound of music this week, so get set for a musical journey you won't soon forget, beginning with International Night at the Symphony, a fifth of Tchaikovsky, a thousand years of Zhou Qian, and firsts for Felix Mendelssohn and Winston-Salem Symphony Associate Conductor Matthew Troy. Then, whatever your musical taste, the Opus Concert Series in Greensboro has a concert for you. Our guru and friend Garong Doshi is back live in Studio A for a Sarod seminar, and he's brought his star pupils with him. From Eastern Classical to American Romantics next with Karoff at the keyboard, Bel Canto Company enchants us with Argentinian parlor songs Au Naturel, and singer-songwriter extraordinaire Emily Hurd will be keeping it real live in Studio A to round out the show. She's got an outstanding new CD out, and she's headed to the Community Arts Cafe next on Triad Arts Up Close. Do you ever hunger for something beyond a weekend trip to the mall and dinner at a greasy chain restaurant? Well, for about the same price, you could enjoy a powerful Russian symphony. A Van Cliburn International Piano Competition medalist, one of today's most exciting living composers, plus a local feel-good story that'll put a big smile on your face. Winston-Salem Symphony Associate Conductor Matthew Troy has been picked to lead his first-ever Classic Series concert with the orchestra, and he's put together a real doozy of an international program to celebrate. Zhou Qian's A Thousand Years of Good Prayers, Felix Mendelssohn's first piano concerto with Italian guest soloist Antonio Pampabaldi, and Tchaikovsky Symphony No. 5. The Classic Series concerts are Sunday, October 14th at 3 and Tuesday, October 16th at 7:30 in the Stevens Center, and things get kicked off on Saturday night at 7:30 with the Kicked Back Classic Series concert. Tickets start at just $13. Matt Troy will conduct all three performances, and he dropped by to talk about it.
I'm having the opportunity to do a whole classics cycle with the Winston-Salem Symphony, and it's really something for me that's been a long time coming, and I really couldn't be more excited about it. Programming is one of the most fun parts, I think, of the job for the conductor, to really think about all of the music that you love the most, what connects with you, and then how you get to then translate that to the audience. The first piece on the program is by a Chinese-American composer named Zhou Qian, born and raised in China. At the Winston-Salem Symphony, we've done so many wonderful and different kinds of music over the past few years, but we haven't done a whole lot of music by Asian composers, and so it really kind of made me go on the hunt for something that I thought could fit on this concert, and I found just a truly fantastic piece to start us off.
I'm not familiar with A Thousand Years of Good Prayers. I've heard his string quartet, The Chinese Wall, it was a subtitle of it, but it struck me as this really nice combination of this lush romanticism, almost Brahmsian sounds, and then at the same time, equally lush, really dissonant chord harmonies and melodic writing.
That's right. It's a new piece, but it's very friendly for the audience. The title of the piece, it's called A Thousand Years of Good Prayers. The title is drawn from a Chinese proverb which states that relationships between people of any kind are difficult. They're just inherently, they have issues and things to be worked on. And so in order to make those relationships healthy and successful for both people, that it takes a thousand years of good prayers to bring that about. And so the piece deals with these kinds of struggles in the beginning and then comes out to, you know, a nice kind of triumphant finish through the end of the piece. And you're right, it does. His writing is very lush, very beautiful, incredible harmonies and sonorities in the orchestra.
Could you give me an example of how he does in sound recreate this idea of struggle?
Yeah, the opening horn calls has these really wide leaps. There's also these kind of striking sforzandos, or these accented notes that kind of stick out of the texture. He also uses certain instruments of the orchestra that have a particular sonority, such as the E-flat clarinet, which is the higher-sounding clarinet up in its extreme range, and yet also instruments like the contrabassoon down in its lower range. The conflict comes from the harmonies and the accented notes and also the extremes of the instrumentation.
Thank you. and then music by Felix Mendelssohn. This one, familiar to lots of folks, the Piano Concerto No. 1, but from the conductor's podium. Matt, what do you need to know about Mendelssohn, the man, before you dive into a score like this one?
Well, I think this piece fits into Mendelssohn's writing in an interesting way. This was written when he was a young Felix Mendelssohn was a young man at the time when he wrote this. He was writing it at a time after he had just gone on an educational tour of Europe and gone to all different places around Europe. And then when he returned home, he decided to write this piano concerto. And I think this piece really embodies the spirit of Mendelssohn in so many ways. It has some of the most joyous writing that you can find in Mendelssohn's music. This kind of lightness, the clarity, especially the third movement of this piano concerto is just really fantastic. And on the concert, the guest pianist is Antonio Pompobaldi.
Have you had a chance to work with him before? What do you know about
him? I've not had a chance to work with him before. When I was looking for the right pianist, I looked around and definitely his playing stood out to me as just being incredible.
Rounding off this really neat program, the Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony.
Dark colors in the orchestra in the first movement. It opens in the key of E minor, very low clarinets, stating the melody with the low strings, eventually the bassoons, all these low-sounding instruments presenting the main motto theme that then recurs throughout the entire symphony. And still even playing on those low sounds that Tchaikovsky uses, even in the fourth movement, when the first violins actually start playing this melody, it's stated in such a low key that one of the notes doesn't even exist on the violin, and the violas have to come in and take the note. So even within the melody, he's still using the depth of those sounds to create these dark-sounding tone colors as he goes through the symphony. My job as the conductor is to be absolutely as true to what the composer wrote as possible and true to what I believe is the intent of the composer. And so I think in so many ways, just simply being aware and following the roadmap that Tchaikovsky has already laid out for us really accomplishes that in an amazing way. The reason I programmed this Tchaikovsky symphony is because I think there has always been something really special about the way that the Winston-Salem Symphony plays Tchaikovsky. It's something that they do with an incredible astuteness. So it's really, in so many ways, a perfect piece for the Winston-Salem Symphony.
That's Winston-Salem Symphony Associate Conductor Matthew Troy. His first ever classic series concert from the podium includes Zhou Tian's A Thousand Years of Good Prayers, Felix Mendelssohn's first piano concerto with award-winning Italian guest soloist Antonio Pompobaldi, and Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5. Tickets start at just $13, and you'll find links to more information on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. I'm David Ford. This is an all-music edition of Triad Arts Up Close today. And now from the Winston-Salem Symphony, we're off to Greensboro. Wouldn't it be nice if you could take in a great concert for the whole family, say, without paying an arm and a leg? Well, if you live in the Triad, you can practically take in a different show a week during Greensboro's Opus Concert Series. From small percussion ensembles and big bands to Philharmonia orchestras and woodwind quintets, Opus has you covered. The next concert is Saturday night, October 13th at 7:30, featuring the Greensboro Tar Heel Chorus at Christ United Methodist Church. Opus 2012-13 runs all the way through May, and it's brought to you free of charge by the Music Center, City Arts of the Greensboro Parks and Recreation Department. Music Center Director Jennifer Hance dropped by recently to fill us in.
Oh, hard times come.
Greensboro Tar Heel Chorus, conducted by Greg Zink. That's a performance coming up in October on Saturday night at 7:30 and in Christ United Methodist Church. That's a nice venue.
It's a wonderful venue, especially for choral groups. It really just has great sound in there. And the Greensboro Tar Heel Chorus is actually a men's a cappella group. So it's kind of like barbershop ramped up.
Do you know how many members are in the ensemble roughly?
There's usually around 30 of them.
Do they do competitions as well? Do you know?
They actually do. And they go around and do things, and they have smaller groups that come out of that, and then their bigger group performs as well.
Okay, so that's more in the turn of the century vein of barbershop tradition.
Yes.
Okay, great. So that's the Greensboro Tar Heel Chorus performing Saturday, October 13th at 7:30 in Christ United Methodist Church. And then Greensboro Concert Band coming up on Friday, November 2nd. Again, 7:30 start in Dana Auditorium at Guilford College. Evan Feldman conducts that group, and they've been around for a while.
They have. They've been around since the 70s, and they're a standard concert band, so you've got your winds, your brass, and your percussion, and they do a huge variety of music, from your standard marches to more contemporary band music as well.
Maybe this would be a good time to kind of talk about who plays in these ensembles and how do people get involved in them?
The ensembles are made up of community members. So we have people from Greensboro. We have people that come from Winston. We have people that come from Danville, Virginia. So we have people that come from all over, and our ensembles are open to everyone. Most of them require you to have a little bit of prior experience, but we just open them right up to anyone in our community that wants to come and play with us.
All right. And from the band tradition, the following day, Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 in Dana, it's the Philharmonia of Greensboro and a shift from the band to the orchestra.
Yes, and that concert will be conducted by a guest conductor, Eduardo Vargas. And that'll be a really fun concert as well. It's going to be very standard. We've got some Dvorak on that concert. We've got Copland on that concert. So some really great standard orchestral music.
Another ensemble that people don't want to miss out on, that's in the middle of the month, Saturday, November 17th at 7:30. Again, Christ United Methodist Church, the Choral Society of Greensboro. They've been around for a while. John Brotherton conducts, and they've got quite a reputation.
They do, and they will be doing a French concert. The main piece in there is going to be the Durafle Requiem. But they'll also be doing several other smaller works by French composers.
Oh, the all-French program. Love it. And the music by Durafle, typically just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it really is.
On Wednesday, November 28th, the Greensboro Percussion Ensembles are back. Mike Lashley conducts the group. How big is this ensemble?
The Greensboro Percussion Ensemble consists of two different groups. We have a beginner group and an advanced group. Our advanced group is adults and high school students. And currently there are 11 people in that top ensemble.
Okay. I'm thinking a lot of 20th century music.
A little bit of everything. You'll hear some Scott Joplin and a lot of arrangements that are put together.
Great.
We will also be collecting new unwrapped toys for the Fox 8 Gift for Kids.
That's Music Center Director Jennifer Hance. The Opus Concert Series is brought to you free of charge by the Music Center and City Arts of the Greensboro Parks and Recreation Department. You'll find links to the complete Opus performance calendar at wfdd.org/triadarts. Opus 2012-13 continues Saturday, October 13th at 7:30 in Christ United Methodist Church in Greensboro. It features the Greensboro Tar Heel Chorus, singing barbershop arrangements for 30 singers and much more. This is Triad Arts Up Close. I'm David Ford. It's all music all the time today on the program. We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, we'll be live in Studio A with a trio of sarod players, tabla, and a wonderful introduction to Indian classical music. We'll return to Studio A on the second half of the program with the awesome Chicago-based singer-songwriter Emily Hurd, raw, unplugged, and right here on Triad Arts Up Close. Stay with us. This is Triad Arts Up Close. I'm David Ford. Lots of great international music making yet to come. Karoff will introduce us to American Romantics. Bel Canto Company will enchant us with Argentinian parlor songs. And singer-songwriter Emily Heard shares some of her most powerful writing to date, live in Studio A. But first, you don't need to book an international flight for a taste of India. That is, if you live here in the Triad. Indian classical music is a powerful tradition that's been passed down generation after generation for thousands of years. This weekend, Triad audiences will have the unique opportunity to experience ragas at dusk from the tradition of one of India's most respected musicians, Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi. He's the guru of Sarod master Gaurang Doshi, his son, who will perform live in concert in Brendel Recital Hall on the Wake Forest University campus Saturday, October 13th at 7 o'clock. Gaurang will be joined on tabla by Rajan Sukadia and by several of Gaurang's outstanding Sarod and sitar students. Guest artist pianist Dr. Thomas Swenson will join the performance as well. Rajan, Gaurang, and Sarod students Colin Alured and Jim Robertson recently stopped by Studio A with their instruments in hand. Colin, I'll throw it your way first. This is not an easy instrument to master. From what I've heard, I'm not a string player, but it seems like there are multiple challenges. What had you take this journey to begin with?
I think the sarod is a lot less familiar instrument than the sitar. And I had heard of the sitar, you know, mostly through the Beatles originally, and George Harrison, and then got into Ravi Shankar and in college. But the sarod I had not heard of until, I guess, about 4 years ago. And I was walking around Pilot Mountain, actually, and had been to India a few months beforehand. And Gaurang came walking by with his family. And so I'd picked up some Hindi in India and said, "Aap kaise hai?" And we'd started talking. And he said, "Oh, I teach Indian classical music." And I played the sarod, and I didn't know what that was. And he gave me his card, and I actually went on YouTube and started watching the sarod, and I just fell in love with it. And it was just a fascinating sound, and I knew that I wanted to play it, and still had the card on my desk, and called Gaurang, and of course, where do you get a sarod? Where do you practice the sarod? And he was very, very kind and said, "My instrument is your instrument. Anytime you want to come here and practice on this instrument, feel free to do that." And so that was really what drew me to it, was his warmth and the fact that he was sort of a gateway into this instrument. Because I do feel the sarod is such a specialized instrument that without a teacher, it would be very difficult to even enter into playing it at all.
It's funny you mentioned Ravi Shankar, because I believe Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi, his guru was Ravi Shankar's guru.
Yes, from the same karana, from the same lineage.
From the same lineage. How about you, Jim, coming into this beautiful yet unusual instrument, the sarod, to say the least?
I was familiar with the sarod, and I spent entirely too much time cruising around on eBay, and I found an inexpensive sarod, which I purchased. It was strung totally wrong with wound strings like guitar strings, and I knew that one needs to slide one's fingers, and I said, well, those will never do, so I started doing internet research, and I discovered the proper string gauges and things of that nature, and then I started playing around with it. I found the proper notes for tuning it, and I started trying to figure out what to do with this. Now, I have been playing stringed instruments for 45 years or more, and I could not figure out the right way to do this. So I did some more internet research and came up with a teacher in Northern Virginia who had been to the Ali Akbar College in California and had come back and was teaching in Northern Virginia, and I came upon Gaurang Doshi, who seemed to me to be much more of what I would call the real thing. They were equal distance apart. And I said, well, would I rather drive to Northern Virginia or would I rather drive to Winston-Salem, North Carolina? And so that was another vote for Winston-Salem. Then I chatted with my brother and sister, and I was in my late 50s at the time, and I said to them and my wife, and I spoke, and I said, do you think I'd be crazy to start taking lessons 150 miles away on an instrument that I'd like to learn? And they said, no, sounds like a good idea to us. And so here I am.
What a support system. Hats off to your wife and family. That's great.
That's right.
Now, I know your background is in bass, guitar, fiddle. What else do you play? Anything else?
Anything with strings that I can carry.
All right. So you're well familiar with the string instrument per se, so maybe the intonation issue not as much of a challenge with sarod because you're used to that on those various fretless instruments. But what's the big challenge coming into a new instrument like sarod?
Well, the intonation is always a challenge. One always needs to pay as much attention to intonation, whether one is a singer or one is a player. One needs to be as spot on as possible. Other challenges for me are, one, memorizing all of the music that I need to memorize, because, as I said, I was late 50s when I started, now I'm early 60s, and things don't stick in my brain as quickly as they used to. Western music, I can listen to a fiddle tune and I can pick it up fairly quickly. Indian music, it takes me much longer. I need to work and work and work to get pieces down properly.
How about you, Colin? I mean, your background in guitar, which is a fretted instrument. Did you find coming to this big silver... First off, describe the... You don't call it a fretboard. What do you call it on a sarod? The throat of the instrument.
Yeah, I have to catch myself from saying fretboard because it's a fingerboard since there's no frets. And yeah, for me, I would describe it as a melodic spaceship. It always catches the eye of people who see it. It's got all these beautifully hand-carved pegs in the shape of lotus flowers and 25 strings and this reflective steel silver fingerboard and a goatskin head that almost resembles a banjo or a djembe. So yeah, it's a very eccentric looking and sounding instrument.
Coming to it from a guitar, were there any particular challenges? Was that transition pretty easy for you?
I guess for me, the intonation, being that I'd never played a fretless instrument, was a particular challenge, and I spent a lot of time just going from one note to the next and maybe practicing two notes for 10 minutes, back and forth for 2 weeks at a time.
Was that frustrating?
It was, but it was also very exciting because all the space in between those notes is also yours to express with now. And so being able to slide around the note combinations was for me extremely kind of freeing and exciting. And then, of course, the playing on top of the fingernail with the left hand is very unusual. With the guitar, you actually just play on the skin of your finger. And so to actually slide on top of your fingernail was very unusual and challenging.
Yeah. Hey, could you give me an example? Take us back to those early woodshed days when you were spending a week on an interval, say, and give us a sample of what that was like.
Here's an example of trying to reach the high saw with perfect intonation.
All the effort, all the rehearsals and lessons with your guru, Garong Doshi, you've reached a certain level. Tell me about the joy aspect of this now, Jim. When you're playing and you're feeling like you're in the moment, could you share that feeling with us?
It's hard to describe. The first time I played an Indian music concert with this ensemble or with this music school, I played violin because I hadn't been playing sarod long enough, and the time for the concert came along, and our guru, Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi, was in the country, and I got to study some with him as well as work with him on the orchestra. When I learned my part well enough to play my part, and I performed in that concert, I had one of the most... It was an elevated... gratified feeling when I got through. It was actually one of the high points of my playing music for 40 plus years. It was just amazing. I was floating. I didn't actually walk up the steps to leave the Brendel Recital Hall. I actually floated up to the lobby and up to my car, and my eyelids were peeled back all the way back to Amherst County, Virginia. It was remarkable. It's the feeling that musicians look for. There's some place that you look for when, as you said, in the moment, when things just lock in perfectly well, and when they do, there's nothing else like it.
Well, that doesn't sound like any fun at all.
Not a bit.
Oh, boy. So, Colin, I mean, you both are seasoned musicians. You've been playing for years, but playing Indian classical music on the sarod in performance, what are you getting out of it?
For me, it taps into a feeling of the sacred. There's a tradition in India that they call Nada Yoga, and the yoga of sound, and also my interest in meditation, and it has sort of a philosophy of connecting one's self to the divine through sound. And that seems to be sort of an inherent quality of this music that really appeals to me and that I really feel when I play it or listen to it.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you all coming here and also bringing in three sarods and the tabla and the drone and all the equipment. Thank you very much. And we're going to hear the Malkaush Rag and performed here live in Studio A with Colin Alured performing sarod and Jim Robertson sarod and their guru Garong Doshi performing sarod as well and the tabla Rajen Sukhadia. This is the Malkaush Rag. We just heard the Malkaush Rag performed with Garong Doshi and Colin Alured, Jim Robertson performing the sarod, and Rajen Sukhadia performed tabla. Beautiful sounds, beautiful performance. Thanks, guys, for sharing that with us. The performance in Brendel Hall is on October 13th at 7 o'clock, Brendel Hall in Winston-Salem and Wake Forest University on the campus there. It's Ragas at Dusk. Put me in the seat in the audience for a moment, Garong. What are we going to see and hear?
Well, you'll see pure Indian classical music as it should be played. There are no modernizations in it. It has the same energy. It has the same freshness in it, which was before 500 years. And we don't read music. It comes from the heart. Indian classical music, it's not entirely in the written form. The writing is just for the studies part. But overall, on the stage, it's improvised. And it will have the best fragrance, I hope so.
I'm David Ford, and we're ready for another short intermission on this all-music edition of Triad Arts Up Close. When we return, now that we understand Indian classical music, it's time for understanding Western classical music with Karoff at the keyboard. Bel Canto Company's Wellborn Young is here, and singer-songwriter Emily Hurd is raw, unplugged, and live in Studio A. Next, when Triad Arts Up Close continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Up Close. I'm David Ford, and this is Karoff at the keyboard.
You know, at the end of the 19th century in the United States, there were a number of really wonderful composers, mostly living in New England, Boston, New York, considered among the best composers of the time in any country, but we sort of lost track of them. Now, these are names that might not be familiar to you. There's a composer called George Whitefield Chadwick, for example. Not a name that is up there with Beethoven or Brahms anymore, but while he was alive, he was considered one of the great living composers. Horatio Parker, likewise, well-respected in his day, taught at Yale, taught the next generation of composers, including Charles Ives and others. They tended to compose in a style that more or less imitated the models that they knew from Europe. Chadwick, Parker, and so many of these other composers went to Europe to study, either in Paris, Frankfurt in Germany, and Cologne, various places. And they learned the European models from their teachers and, of course, also from the published music. They were imitating Schumann and Mendelssohn and all the other great European masters. They're great craftsmen, these American composers, and often quite beautiful. But for whatever reason, at the end of their lives, taste shifted and they've kind of fallen through the cracks of history. Here's a sweet piece by George Whitefield Chadwick, composed in about 1905, and it's in the style of a barcarolle. Now, barcarolle is a boat song. Chopin wrote a barcarolle. A number of other European composers wrote them. But this barcarolle has an American subtitle. It's called In the Canoe. An American boat is not a European boat. And like a typical barcarolle, you can hear the rocking, rolling waves in the left hand and the lovely melody in the right above. Now, in those kaleidoscopically shifting harmonies from here to here to here, I hear the hand of Gabriel Fauré, for example, teacher of Debussy, who also wrote some barcarolles around the same time, actually, 1905. Beautiful stuff, charming, and definitely worthy of our listening. Another composer around the same time, actually a friend of Chadwick's, was Horatio Parker, a dean of the School of Music at Yale, composing in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. Here's a piece called Étude Mélodieuse, the Melodious Étude. Now, an étude is a study piece. We mostly think of Chopin as composing études. And here Parker is writing a little accompaniment like a harp, which floats along repeatedly, and on top of that, a melody is projected. And the challenge of this étude then is to play both quietly and while at the same time projecting the melody. Thank you.
our good friend Peter Karoff at the keyboard. He's a Steinway artist and professor at Wake Forest University. You'll find links to Peter's excellent recordings at wfdd.org/triadarts. We love our music here in the Triad, and I'd say it's time to get vocal about it. From its inception back in 1982, Bel Canto Company in Greensboro has been praised for its uniquely beautiful interpretation and the sensitive tonal quality of its singers. Since then, Bel Canto has presented hundreds of concerts throughout the Southeast and performed literally thousands of pieces of music spanning the globe and the centuries. Their musical journey continues Friday night, October 12th at 8 o'clock, and Monday night, October 15th at 7:30 in Christ United Methodist Church in Greensboro. Bel Canto Au Naturel features arrangements of spirituals and 18th century works, as well as new music. Bel Canto artistic director and conductor Dr. Wellborn Young recently spoke with me about the first two works on the program, music by Eric Whitaker and Argentinian art song composer Carlos Guastavino. Tell me a little bit about this piece by Eric Whitaker, Cloudburst.
He exploits sound and sonic experience for the listener, so we're building a lot of vertical harmonic structures in which the voices get to play and the text gets to resonate. He also incorporates aleatoric ideas in this with individual voices beginning text at different times at their own rate.
We should probably break down for listeners what exactly an aleatoric gesture is.
Well, this would be where individual singers at times noted in the score can begin singing specified pitches at any time at any rhythm. And therefore, it's not a homogenous sound. It's a sound that grows and undulates and builds to a cacophonous sound. But the whole piece builds to a place where, with percussion, you experience this building tension to the releasing of a storm with thunder and lightning and wind chimes and all the things that you would expect to have happen when a storm occurs that eventually resolves to something very calm and post-storm-like, returning to the text that he began with and with the sounds that he began with, which are very quiet and reflective. And the text is really, it's a jarring text at times by Octavio Paz. In the middle, when the storm awakens, really, we're building into a text that translates, "But tell me, burnt earth, is there no water? Only blood, only dust, only naked footsteps on the thorns." And with that sort of idea, you start building into this huge deluge, if you will.
Besides being just good choral writing, it seems to be comfortable for singers, just in general, I'm talking about Eric Whitaker's work. What are some of his trademarks?
Added note chords particularly are part of his trademark, creating sonic landscapes in which the voice resonates. And typically, he seems to know the voice very, very well. So that the singers have an easy time singing the piece. He understands voice leading. And I think he also understands really how vowels inside of a text work. And so you get overtones because of the way he sets particular vowels in particular words.
Yeah. He is so popular. It has been for years now. I love his bass lines. They often catch me off guard, more the vocal lines. It seems like it serves like a melodic function in a way that's unusual.
Well, yes, in many ways it does. And so in that way, it seems like a linear composition as opposed to a vertical composition. Linear being that each voice has a melodic content, as opposed to what he does really well, which is create tall, statuesque harmonic structures as well. So it's a wonderful combination of this linear lyricism and this stacking of harmonies.
Next in the program, a collection of three works by Carlos Guastavino. What do you love about this piece? The first of the trio, the Gala del Día, the finery of the day.
This actually comes from a set of six pieces called Indianas. And Guastavino, these are parlor songs almost, and you would expect maybe a quartet to sing them as opposed to an ensemble of voices. But of course, an ensemble of Bel Canto's ability can make it sound like a quartet. So it's a rapid-moving, and if there is such a thing, a Spanish flair inside the accompaniment, lots of syncopated rhythms and melodic content that suggests Spanish or Argentinian heritage. What I love about all of these pieces is that they are appealing, They sound incredibly fresh to the ear and capture an environment that we don't ordinarily visit here in America.
And then Wade in the Water, Moses Hogan arrangement. If you're the soloist for this one, you better feel it. You can't fake this one.
That's exactly right. And the writing, of course, Moses Hogan's writing is always superlative. But in terms of actually singing the solo lines, you have to find your own voice, and it has to feel incredibly natural. And actually one of his shorter spirituals.
Yeah, it's peppy. It goes right along, and it's quite a showpiece for some great bluesy singing. On to Wyndham, Daniel Reed, the 18th century composer.
Yes, and arranged by a friend of mine, Brad Holmes, at Millikan University. This is a shape note type piece, and it's going to show bel canto in a different vocal production. We're going after a very Appalachian, it's a more forward nasal production, and so we're going to start with this as a processional piece.
Deny thyself and take thy
The music, Reed was an 18th century American composer, but it has almost a Renaissance-y feel here. Am I going on a limb too far?
Oh, I don't think so. I think what you're hearing are probably open fifths and octaves at the end of verses, and that sounds very, very Renaissance. And at times there are only two parts or those parts doubled, and so you get these open sonorities as opposed to what we're used to hearing are triads and added note chords. So it sounds much older than it is.
My thanks to bel canto artistic director and conductor Dr. Wellborn Young. Bill's also director of choral activities and associate professor of music at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. He'll lead bel canto company in their fall concert titled Au Naturel on Friday night, October 12th at 8 o'clock, and Monday night, October 15th at 7:30 in Christ United Methodist Church in Greensboro. You'll find links to more information on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. This is Triad Arts Up Close. I'm David Ford, and now we're off to Studio A.
Sundown, run down, I'm gonna come down to the riverside. Get me set free, I'm gonna let go.
A masterpiece. This is an album to fall into and swim in forever. So wrote American songwriters Paul Zollo of my next guest, Chicago-based singer-songwriter Emily Heard, and her recent album, Long Lost Ghosts. Emily's just teamed up with fellow Chicago musicians Colby Maddox and Greg Ostrom to create a great new band, Stone Blind Valentine. Together, they'll perform at Community Arts Cafe, 411 West 4th Street in Winston-Salem, tonight at 8 o'clock. Emily and her band are outstanding musicians. The quality of Emily's songwriting, as previously noted, is absolutely tremendous, and I'd be willing to bet that your $10 for admission tonight will be money extremely well spent. Emily Heard is a multi-instrumentalist known for her bluesy piano licks and soulful vocals, with 8 studio albums to her credit. Long Lost Ghosts features a series of Emily's country folk songs, which she wrote on her ukulele, and she's joined by a group of excellent musicians. This is Skipping Stones from the album Long Lost Ghosts. Emily Heard joined me in Studio A to talk about the music and her new band, Stone Blind Valentine.
Yeah.
Welcome back. You come anytime.
Oh, and we do. I'll be down here no less than twice a year until the day I drop. I love it.
All
so
right.
Every October and hopefully earlier next year as well.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, since you were so kind to haul not only your banjo, but the keyboard and your equipment, love to give listeners a chance to check out some of your music. I want to hear Heaven This Way. When did you first record this one?
2010.
Okay. So Heaven This Way, if it's heaven when you're headed toward the light, I think I just saw it. Well, let's hear it. And then we can talk about it on the flip side. This is from the Daytime Fireflies album, Emily Heard and Heaven This Way, live in Studio A.
If it is God each time that you got a sense of peace, then I think I might know him, judging by going home this evening. The crackle of leaves and the humming of streets and the dancing of flies, and the thought of your face up ahead just a ways it pacifies. If it is heaven when you start heading for the light, then I think I just saw it, I think I just caught a glimpse tonight. While taking the back roads on my way back home in the rain, your house is a star, I'm driving my car to heaven this way.
Emily Heard joined me in Studio A. We started off with Heaven This Way. Powerful stuff. Just kissed a bit of God's lips.
I remember what the overwhelming feeling was, is that I was driving to my mom and dad's house in Rockford, Illinois. They lived back in the forest, and it was fall, my favorite time. I mean, just filled with glee. Mm-hmm. It was raining, and I just was thinking about the idea of, oh, I love the way their house looks in the woods. And when I got there, that feeling I knew was a song, and then I just try to not think about it very much. When you're writing a song at all, you got a piece of paper and you got a pencil. You don't edit yourself in the writing process. I really believe that.
Let it flow.
Let it flow. So I think I wrote the chorus to that tune immediately. I didn't edit it. I still haven't changed it. And then I wrote, you know, that third verse, if it's grace every time that you taste a bit of some glory, then I think I just kissed a bit of God's lips. That just fell out. I didn't think about it. It just happened. And then after I thought, oh, I like that format and I like these chords, then I thought, okay, you need a first and a second verse. And what are you feeling and what needs to be written? And as soon as I start seeing that I've contrived this in a way that's like too thought out, I think when I first started writing that tune, I had written something like, the tune starts now, if it's God each time that you've got a sense of peace, then I think I might know him. I think I had started writing that, I know God because, or something, you know, something the way that Emily would say it. Mm. And then I thought, oh, this isn't what this song wants at all, you know? And so then I backed up and I thought, how does this tune want to, you know, continue forth? And I found that it wanted to say that. I mean, that's the best way I can say it.
But ultimately what comes out is this beautiful song about just being, feeling so connected and which is something that's so hard to put into words. We've all had that before. You're walking down the street or you're driving your car and suddenly, oh, life is unfolding just the way it's supposed to somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But you captured it, I thought, in a nice way.
Yes.
Am I off on this tune?
No, that's absolutely what it's about. Absolutely what it's about. And it's wonderful because as a writer, I think as an artist, I can feel it in you. You don't often sit down to talk about something when something's so good. And as an adult, I've really changed over to this idea of, wow, I feel amazing. And rather than call a friend and get a drink, I'm going to go and sit down with my instrument and try to, you know, do something with that. Because so frequently we're like, I'm just so down and I'm going to go pour out my heart. And anyway, so that has been a great thing that happens with sticking with music as an adult. So that song, absolutely. Good place. It came out. And thank God.
Well, thanks for not going and getting that drink, because I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so love that, and I want to hear more, Emily, as long as you're here. Long Lost Ghosts. Great lyrics, but also a gorgeous melody. I want to hear it again. Will you share it with us?
Of course.
All right.
You were made by main drags. Somewhere down the street you thought my lips were honey and my hair was winter wheat. And it was in your mind. Now I'm on my way by Greyhound bus. I have come for you because I thought you were all there was, and you are.
Lost Ghosts, the title track from Chicago-based singer-songwriter Emily Heard's 2011 release. Emily's here live in Studio A on Try It Arts Up Close, which just sounds great. I admire any musician who can come into a dry studio, just you and your instrument, and play. Hats off.
Thank you.
Faith in Memories comes out in this tune for me, or believing in that so strongly. Tell me about how this song came about, if it's not too
painful. I'll tell you, absolutely.
Painful.
Oh, no, it's not painful at all. I've got a pretty good sense of humor about all matters. You have to have a pretty good sense of humor about all matters of the heart. I was driving out to New York. I had the idea that I was going to chase down an old love, and I was writing this tune on my ukulele. And I have to say that even though I say in the lyrics I was on my way by Greyhound bus, I was on my way by Subaru, but Greyhound bus just sounded better.
Yeah, it's nice rhythm to it.
I needed that. So I was on my way by Subaru to chase down this old love, and I was just the song wrote itself immediately when I was finished seeing him, and I got there and he introduced me to his new girlfriend. And but at the time, I was just so naive and hopeful. And I thought, this is such a, I mean, who can't relate to that? You know, you hearken back, there's no taint on your, you know, previous memories. And so I did that. And the tune just fell out. And I love the idea of naivete. You know, when I was growing up, there was a statue in a cemetery near where my parents lived. And I thought that was the Statue of Liberty. And then down the street, there was this really tall building that I thought was the Eiffel Tower, because your world is so small. And I wanted to capture that feeling, you know, how you thought my hair was winter wheat, or I thought just giving you a hug was making love, or I thought, you know, you don't know better. And I feel like that's so magical. And so the tune sort of is supposed to feel like that.
I like how in so many of the lyrics you bring back the past into the present, as if this is who you are today. So it is real now. The line, those days are made for, no, those days were made for us,
yep.
And they are still. Does that speak to that, absorbing that experience and somehow?
Yeah.
I just think it's such a simple, beautiful way of putting that.
Yes. Well, at some point you have to stop talking a metaphor and actually just say, I feel like that's usually what I use the bridge for. Hey there, listener, in case you haven't picked up on where I'm going, this is what it is. And so I was just trying to say, listen, yes, you are still so much here. This, who I was and what I felt is still who I am today. The shards of the past still may have been broken, but you're still, they're still who you are currently. And so I'm not saying people don't grow or improve, but, you know, honestly, that's still, we're made up of our experiences. That's what that was alluding to. So,
yeah. Again, I appreciate when it's put that crisply.
Thank you. Me too.
We got to move on with one last piece. Can we have one more? One more.
Oh, yes. One more. Okay. I definitely have it in me.
So what would you like to, what's another tune that you could share with us?
I've written a new tune. I wrote it on the banjo. It is the strongest song that I've written in a very long time. The lyrics are actually what I thought was mean. I have a tendency to write things pretty diplomatically, or I don't really say completely mean things. But I got permission from my very good songwriter friend in Chicago, Erin Tedesco, and she says, Emily, why don't you just let it go? If you want to write a song that's really, you know, powerful and you're not going to be nice, just do it. You don't have to be nice all the time. So I wrote this tune, and I just love it. It's a mean tune.
All right. Well, let's listen to Emily Heard being mean. And the tune is?
Extra, Extra.
Emily Heard live in Studio A. Extra, Extra. Wow, yeah, I gotta say, Emily, I think that's the first tune I've heard where the supposed cheated upon is so much the victor in so many senses. That's a very powerful song.
That's right. It's meant to, I don't know, just give some voice to the part of you that that wants to make the person that did you wrong hurt in front of other people. And it's such a terrible thing. And as a nice person, you know you don't do that. But I don't know. I guess I was actually releasing a very true part of me in writing that tune that just had been lied to and wanted somebody to know, hey, I know you lied to me. And even though I'm not going to, you know, out your name or out you to yourself or out you to my friends, I will at least write a song about it. And doesn't that feel really great? And yeah, the tune turned out great. I wasn't sure I was going to, you know, do anything with it, but I played it for the guys in Stone Blind Valentine. They said, oh, yeah, we are so recording this song. So we did. And it turned out just really great. The meter of it, it's just so, you know, God, you know, no, God, it's that menacing, you know, not messing around, simple rock beat behind it. So yeah, it was a wonderful tune. I just felt glorious when I got done writing it.
My thanks to Chicago-based singer-songwriter Emily Hurd for joining me live in Studio A. Her new band is Stone Blind Valentine, and you can hear them live in concert tonight, Friday, October 12th at the Community Arts Cafe, 411 West 4th Street, downtown. It's the band's first show in Winston-Salem, and it starts at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $10, and you'll find links to more information at wfdd.org/triadarts. Well, that's all for today's program. Our senior producer is Catherine Mobley, and our audio engineer is Eddie Garcia. You'll find links to more information about all of the arts organizations and events we've covered today on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. And as always, I'd love to hear from you. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for joining me today for Triad Arts Up Close.